Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee just voted 12 to 11 to send Betsy DeVos's nomination to head the Education Department to the full Senate. It was a party line vote. Today's guest, Barbara Mattaloni, the president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association, believes that Betsy DeVos is a terrible choice for students and public schools. She says, quote, her longtime priority as a big money donor to privatization causes has been to undermine public education by promoting vouchers and charter schools, end quote. The Massachusetts Teachers Association joins a growing number of parents, teachers, and students opposing the confirmation. In fact, over the past couple of weeks, senators say they have been flooded with letters and phone calls. In fact, if you call Senator Kamala Harris's phone number right now, chances are that line is busy. Before taking on Donald Trump's Secretary of Education, the Massachusetts Teachers Association was among one of the unions leading the fight against an initiative to expand charter schools in Massachusetts. On Election Day, voters in Massachusetts overwhelmingly rejected a ballot initiative to lift the state's charter school cap of 120 to allow 12 more per year, effectively eliminating the cap. Wall Street, the Walton Foundation, and others funded the pro-charter side with nearly $26 million, while teachers' unions spent $15 million. It was the most expensive measure in Massachusetts history. Joining us to talk about Betsy DeVos and this charter school initiative that went down to defeat is Barbara Mattaloni, president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. Barbara believes that strong unions led by rank-and-file members produce stronger public schools and communities. Barbara is on leave as a senior lecturer in the Labor Studies Department at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, and she joins us from the studios of WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. Hi, Barbara. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you, and I'm so glad we have you on today because just about an hour ago, the Senate Committee, Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, voted 12 to 11 to send Betsy DeVos's nomination to the full Senate. If the Senate confirms Betsy DeVos, she will head the Education Department. This was a party line vote, 12 to 11. There's so much going on right now, Barbara. It's hard to keep up with all of these nominations. So many votes are happening on the same day. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of Betsy DeVos and why she is so concerning to you?
Well, I think in your intro, you captured it with the words that I've used before. In Detroit, in Michigan, Betsy's efforts have really been about undermining public education through vouchers, through charters, through an effort that was unfortunately successful in too many ways in terms of her interests in privatizing public schools, taking public funds and putting it into private hands, hands that are not accountable to democratically elected school committees. And her interests are about religious education, about privatization that is for profit, including potentially, we don't know because we haven't seen all of her records, for her own profit in schools and in education companies. She's a disaster for public education in our country. She is a logical conclusion to what's been a 30-year effort to charterize, privatize public education throughout the country. So it's not a surprise that we're here, but it's absolutely devastating.
And tell us a little bit about the money that Betsy DeVos, the Family Foundation, has spent. Of the $100 million that the Dick and Betsy DeVos Family Foundation gave out from 1999 to 2014, nearly half went to Christian organizations. And Christina Rizga has written extensively about Betsy DeVos for Mother Jones. Her latest piece is called Betsy DeVos Wants to Use America's Schools to Build, quote, God's Kingdom. Trump's education secretary pick has spent a lifetime working to end public education as we know it.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of fascinating because there are two important things to say about Betsy DeVos. One is this idea that she wants to remove the separation between church and state and be using public funds to support so-called Christian schools, and that's a critical issue. But the other thing, in terms of thinking about sort of this country and God, is that she's also very interested in profiting and making opportunities for others to profit from the privatization of public schools. She's also given millions of dollars to some of the very senators who voted to support her nomination today. So she's really been working a number of different angles. There's a blogger out of Massachusetts, Edu Scheister, who really did a beautiful piece a few weeks ago where she went to Detroit and she talked about what DeVos did in Detroit and how much of it was directing funds to Republican candidates in order to undermine any sort of Democratic control within Michigan. And really pressuring those Republicans then to vote for interests like vouchers and charters, the undermining of public schools, and in undermining public education, also undermining public sector unions.
In Michigan, as you said, she's regarded for overhauling public education. National reading and math rankings have fallen as charter schools have expanded. According to the New York Times, Detroit now has a bigger share of students in charters than any American city except New Orleans, which turned almost all of its schools into charters after Hurricane Katrina. Half of the charters perform only as well or worse than Detroit's traditional public schools. 80% of charter schools in Michigan are for profit. Can you talk about the role that Betsy DeVos played in ensuring that would be the case, Barbara, and why people should be concerned about for-profit charter schools, excuse me. Do we have Barbara? Did we just lose Barbara? Oh, okay. I think they cannot hear me on their end. All right. We're going to fix that. Barbara, can you hear me?
Yeah, I just got you back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. We're having some technical problems. So I wanted you to talk about the role that Betsy DeVos played to ensure that 80% of charter schools in Michigan are for profit.
What she did was she worked hard to fight for tax cuts for the wealthy that would then divert taxpayer funds from public schools to private schools and allow for-profit charter school corporations to operate.
Barbara, are you hearing yourself?
I am hearing myself.
All right. Yeah, I thought so. All right. Why don't we fix this? Let's take a couple of minutes and fix this. Today, we are talking with Barbara Mattaloni. She's president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. And we brought Barbara on to talk about the defeat of a charter school amendment in Massachusetts, the most expensive initiative in Massachusetts history. $41 million were spent. What this would have done is raised the cap on charter schools in Massachusetts to allow 12 more per year. Right now, that cap is at 120. This would have allowed 12 more per year. And this got a lot of funding from Wall Street, the Walton Foundation, hedge fund managers, $26 million on that side, and then teachers' unions spent $15 million. This was watched across the country by people who still believe in public education and care about public education, and it went down to defeat. 62% of Massachusetts voters voted against question two. So we invited Barbara on to talk about this, and we got, on the same day, Betsy DeVos's confirmation hearing went to a Senate committee. They just voted 12 to 11 to send Betsy DeVos's nomination to head the Education Department to the full Senate, and it was a party line vote. And we're having some technical issues. I'm still actually hearing myself, and Barbara hears herself. So what we're going to do is fix these problems. In the meantime, if you'd like to give us a call, we'd love to hear from you. If you work in public education and you're concerned about these issues, what questions or comments do you have? And what about Betsy DeVos? Her nomination is now heading to the full Senate. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. 8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And maybe we can just call Barbara on a landline. That might work. We're trying to reach Barbara Mataloni, president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association, and she says that Betsy DeVos is a terrible choice for students and public schools. This morning, the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee voted 12 to 11 to send Betsy DeVos's nomination to head the Education Department to the full Senate. It was a party line vote. And do we have Barbara back? We don't. All right. We're going to connect with Barbara in just a minute. If you'd like to join us, if you have any questions or comments for Barbara, if you have any questions or comments about the confirmation of Betsy DeVos, it's not completely confirmed yet, but it did pass a committee this morning, 12 to 11. 12 Republicans voted yes. 11 Democrats voted no. There were a lot of strong statements about Betsy DeVos from Senator Elizabeth Warren and others, saying that they have been flooded with phone calls and emails from across the country, people who are concerned about Betsy DeVos. During her hearing confirmation, she wasn't able to answer very basic questions about education, especially when it comes to children with disabilities. I was just checking Twitter, and a lot of parents with children with disabilities are very concerned about Betsy DeVos. And so today we are talking about her confirmation. Can we get Barbara on a landline? Is that what we're doing? Barbara, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I've been able to hear everything you have to say.
Okay, good. I think we're fine now.
That sounds better.
All right, so sorry about that.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, so we're going to play a clip from the nomination, but I just want to give people a little more information about Betsy DeVos, because we've been hit with nomination after nomination, and it's difficult to keep up with all of this. Can you talk a little bit more about how charters have expanded in Michigan and the role that Betsy DeVos played in not only expanding charters, but for-profit charters, and why that's so concerning to you?
Well, back in 2001, so to give you a sense about how long this has been going on, she spent $5.8 million looking to push school vouchers nationally, but because of the money that she spent in Michigan to open up the door for charter schools, 80% of the charters in Michigan are now for-profit charters. And I'll say, just as an aside, like for-profit or not-for-profit, the real issue that this comes down to is that the language, if you listen to the language of Betsy DeVos and other corporate education reformers, they use this language of choice. They use this language of about individuals meeting the needs of individual children. They use the language of failing schools. They actually talk about public schools as government schools, not as public schools. And in all of that, they've created a narrative that works to undermine the idea of the public good, of public education as something that we have a shared commitment to. And they also, in doing that, push this idea that we should each of us be responding only in terms of our individual needs and not seeing ourselves as part of a broader network, which, again, is what public education is about, is actually introducing young people to the idea that we are part of a broader community that is a democracy. So she's been just dangerously effective in being able to undermine public education in Massachusetts through charter schools. She has worked with others to fund national campaigns that look to provide vouchers, which are sort of the next logical step from charter schools. If you're talking about individualism and you're talking about individual choice and only caring about your own needs, then vouchers make sense. But of course, one of the significant crimes in that narrative is that the young people and families that are most in need of high-quality public education lose in all of these schemes. So while they're being sold a narrative of individual choice that somehow is going to rescue them from so-called failing schools, they are left really adrift at some point. And not having the money drained from the public schools undermines those schools. And they're actually in a worse place because of that, and we see that very clearly in Detroit, where just a year ago we had the teachers walking out because of the incredibly the terrible condition of the public school buildings in Detroit. So it's a crime on so many levels, But a key piece of it is that they've worked so well, almost effectively, to shift the narrative about what it means to have public education and why we should support it.
And in Detroit in March, there was a bill that would have put charter schools under the same public authority as public schools, but lawmakers gutted that provision. And a columnist for the Detroit Free News, Stephen Henderson, reports that the DeVos family made the maximum allowable contributions to the Michigan Republican Party, $180,000, and then made another $475,000 contribution to the party.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of fascinating, and we had the same example in Massachusetts where, as you were saying, Wall Street hedge fund managers, Walmart, spent $26 million. Ostensibly, you know, their narrative is that they're out this to do this for the well-being of the students of Massachusetts and DeVos's case in Michigan. And yet what we've seen is that the Michigan educational system is collapsing, that they can't hold on to teachers, that the actual physical plants are collapsing. It's just criminal the way that they have set this up. And the positive news about DeVos's nomination, and, you know, they're really reaching here to say that, is that the story of what has been a 30-year assault on public education is now exposed to the entire nation. She is the logical extreme of what's been happening for 30 years, and educators across the country have been for years trying to ring the bell to help people understand the danger that we've been in. With this nomination, with the committee moving her forward to the full Senate, that bell is really ringing loud and clear, and people understand just what danger we're in.
Barbara Mattaloni is president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. She strongly opposes the confirmation of Betsy DeVos, a billionaire from Michigan, who has really led the way to overhaul public education in Michigan. She's got a very long track record. Lots of good reporting has come out on Betsy DeVos. And I want to play a clip from the nomination hearing. Again, this morning, a committee, the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee, voted 12 to 11 to send Betsy DeVos's nomination to head the Education Department to the full Senate. It was a party line vote. And you're going to hear a clip, senators asking Betsy DeVos questions a couple of weeks ago.
I support accountability.
Equal accountability for all schools that receive federal funding.
I support accountability.
Okay, is that a yes or a no?
I support accountability.
Do you not want to answer my question?
I support accountability.
Okay, should all schools that receive if schools, taxpayer funding, be required to meet the requirements of the individuals with disabilities in education?
I think that is a matter that's best left to the states.
So some states might be good to kids with disabilities, and other states might not be so good, and then what, people could just move around the country if they don't like how their kids are being treated?
I think that's an issue that's best left to the states.
You can't say definitively today that guns shouldn't be in schools?
Well, I will refer back to Senator Enzi and the school that he was talking about in Wapiti, Wyoming. I think probably there, I would imagine that there's probably a gun in the school to protect from potential grizzlies.
I want to go back to the Individual with Disabilities in Education Act. That's a federal civil rights law. So do you stand by your statement a few minutes ago that it should be up to the states whether to follow it?
The law must be followed. Federal law must be followed where federal dollars are in play.
So were you unaware what I just asked you about the IDEA, that it was a federal law?
I may have confused it.
I do have to say I'm concerned that you seem so unfamiliar with it, and that you seem to support voucher schools that have not honored, you know, have made students sign away their rights to make sure that the law is enforced. That's very troubling to me.
Mrs. DeVos, do you have any direct experience in running a bank?
Senator, I do not.
Uh-huh. Have you ever managed or overseen a trillion-dollar loan program?
I have not.
How about a billion-dollar loan program?
I have not.
Okay, so no experience in managing a program like this. Mrs. DeVos, have you ever taken out a student loan from the federal government to help pay for college?
I have not.
Have any of your children had to borrow money in order to go to college?
They have been fortunate not to.
Have you had any personal experience with a Pell Grant?
Not personal experience, but certainly friends and students with whom I've worked.
So you have no personal experience with college financial aid or management of higher education?
Advancement that they're making in each subject area.
Well, that's growth. That's not proficiency. So in other words, the growth they're making isn't growth. The proficiency is an arbitrary standard.
If they've reached a level, the proficiency is if they've reached a third grade level for reading, et cetera.
I'm talking about the debate between proficiency and growth.
Yes.
And what your thoughts are on them.
Well, I was just asking to clarify then.
Well, this is a subject that has been debated, but it surprises me that you don't know this issue.
And that is a clip from Betsy DeVos's hearing a couple of weeks ago. Just this morning, the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee voted 12-11 to send her nomination to head the Education Department to the full Senate. It was a party line vote, 12-11. And we're joined today by Barbara Mattaloni. She's the president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. Barbara, lots of concerning things there. Again, a lot of parents who have children with disabilities say they are very concerned about Betsy DeVos's statement that civil rights law for students with disabilities is a matter, quote, best left to the states. Can you talk about that and why that's concerning?
Well, they certainly should be concerned. There's a lot in those clips to be concerned about. Just this morning, actually, during the Senate committee hearing where they voted on DeVos, Senator Kaine took this issue up directly and really addressed very clearly that it is federal law and the Department of Education in the right hands that protects the civil rights of our students in our public schools. The idea of talking about taking those rights and the oversight of the federal government and putting it back in the states, this sort of states' rights argument, is really going backwards to the arguments that were about segregation of our schools. And those are civil rights issues relative to African-American students, to black and brown children, but as just as dangerous for students with disabilities. It's absolutely chilling, but it is not, again, surprising given the larger narrative that DeVos presents, which is that government, so here's a woman who's looking to be appointed as a cabinet member in our federal government, that really doesn't believe in government, except to the degree that public funds can be moved into private hands, can be used for that advantage. The other thing that's really important listening to those clips is, and I watched her the hearing with DeVos, the absolute lack of interest in having this information. People supposedly prepped her for those questions, but the arrogance in choosing not to know even some of the most basic answers tells me that she has no interest in public education. It sort of exposes it. Why would I know about something that I'm out to destroy anyway? Why bother with that? You would have expected some level of preparation to be able to address those answers, but she really seemed to have no interest in it, and why should she? She hasn't shown in any of her actions that she is actually interested in public education and the well-being of all of our students.
And in order to block these nominations, Democrats need Republicans to vote no. And these nominees know that that's highly unlikely. I mean, so far, a lot of Democrats have voted for Donald Trump's nominations. And this morning, Republican Senators Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski expressed concerns about Betsy DeVos, but they still voted yes.
Yeah, so I was talking to some colleagues as I was driving down here to Woods Hole about their statements. And, you know, I honestly feel like they were just trying to placate the thousands of people who called them up to say, please don't do this to public schools in the United States. But in the end, they voted on the party line. And unfortunately, I anticipate that that's what we're going to continue to see.
Barbara Madaloni is president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association, and today we are talking about Betsy DeVos. She just passed, or actually the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee voted 12 to 11 to send her nomination to head the Education Department to the full Senate. It was a party line vote, 12 to 11. And we're going to talk with Barbara after the break about how teachers successfully defeated a measure that would have lifted the state's charter school cap of 120 to allow 12 more per year. This is in Massachusetts. And this was a heavily funded measure. Wall Street and the Walton Foundation spent almost $26 million. The teachers' union spent $15 million, and this measure went down. And we'll find out how the teachers did it. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call us at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may leave a comment at the show's website, set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, and you can also tweet us at yourcallradio.
Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about how photographers are documenting the impacts of climate change, from declining sea ice in the Arctic to coral bleaching on the Great Barrier Reef. Photographers give us a visual sense of the human toll on the environment, and they are seeing major changes firsthand. So what do photographs reveal about the urgency that we're facing, and how are they motivating people to take action? I hope you can join us tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the current state of public education and what's to come. Barbara Madaloni is president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association, and she and so many other educators believe that Betsy DeVos is a terrible choice for students and public schools. This morning, a Senate committee voted 12 to 11 to send her nomination to head the Education Department to the full Senate. It was a party line vote. And if you'd like to join us to talk about your thoughts on Betsy DeVos and the state of public education and where it's going under Donald Trump, with Republicans controlling the Senate and the House, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any personal stories to share with us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Barbara, before we take calls and talk about the charter measure that went down in Massachusetts, I wanted to ask you, what should we expect with a Betsy DeVos heading the Education Department with Republicans controlling the House and the Senate?
Boy, I've been asked that so many times. I think that sort of practically one of the things that we need to worry about most, sort of immediately and directly, is that they would begin to issue block grants to state for Title I funding, and that then, you know, this whole idea of first of all, part of what would happen with that is over time, that would probably diminish the amount of funds that are available to our states for state education programs in our neediest communities, because that's what Title I funding serves. Also very concerned that as part of those block grants, that there may be some demands for some percentage of those funds to be used for vouchers. And so the federal government could be used to further privatize public education that way. In Massachusetts, we have a constitutional requirement that any public funds cannot be used for private interests in private schools. But we see nationally that there's a real potential for controlling how funds can be used and pushing a privatization agenda. Now, what's interesting about that is the Obama administration did something very similar with Race to the Top, where, you know, coming after the crash of 2008, when so many states were desperate for funds, they attached accountability requirements to federal funding that really led to where we are now in terms of the charterization of our schools, the high-stakes testing that is continuing to oppress our students and our educators in our public schools, and this accountability regime that is used to so-called prove that schools are failing and then open the door to privatization and vouchers. I found DeVos's statement when she was being questioned where she kept saying, I believe in accountability, but she wouldn't say that charter schools or schools receiving vouchers should be held accountable, really paints a very clear picture of what's been happening, again, for the last 20 or 30 years to public education, which is this demand for a hyper-accountability based on test scores and at the for public schools, and at the same time, charterization that doesn't have the same accountability measures applied to them. That's what we've seen in Massachusetts, that we've seen across the country.
And I'm glad you brought this up, because Valerie Strauss, education reporter with The Washington Post, has a great piece called Democrats Reject Her, But They Helped Pave the Road to Education Nominee DeVos. And she writes that it was Democrats who helped pave the road for DeVos to take the helm of the Education Department. Democrats have in recent years sounded and acted a lot like Republicans in advancing corporate education reform, which seeks to operate public schools as if they were a business, not civic institutions. By embracing many of the tenets of corporate reform, including the notion of school choice and the targeting of teachers and their unions as being blind to the needs of children, Democrats helped make DeVos's education views, once seen as extreme, seem less so. And I just think about a show we did, I think it was last year, about then Mayor Cory Booker, mayor of, anyway, Cory Booker was in New Jersey. Can you help me with this? Was he?
Yeah, he was the mayor of
Newark. Thank you. Yeah. When he was the mayor of Newark, he opened the door for Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, to spend millions and millions of dollars to turn the entire state into a charter state. I mean, this is former mayor of New York, now Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, it really has been a bipartisan effort to undermine our schools. And the way I see DeVos's nomination is it was one small step from Democrats for Education Reform, which is a group that is, its primary focus is the privatization of public education through charter schools, the demonization of educators and their unions, and a hyper-accountability that is only used in public schools and not applied to charter schools. It was a logical step to move to vouchers. They opened the door with the narrative of choice, with the narrative of business models, with this whole sort of consumer approach to the public good. And so here we are, and so I'm glad those Senate Democrats voted against this nominee. But as we address the Trump era in terms of public education, we need to really pull back all the way back and say, what do we value for public education? How does public education fit with democracy? Why are public sector unions critical to democracy? Why are public sector unions critical to high-quality public education? Stand strong with that understanding, and we need the Democrats to step up and be with us on this.
Barbara Mattaloni is president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. Today we're talking about Betsy DeVos. The Senate Committee, Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, voted 12 to 11 this morning to send her nomination to head the Education Department to the full Senate. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Gail in Menlo Park. Hi, Gail. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi there. Where to start? I witnessed the formation of a charter school near me and went to the meetings, and I was really shocked at the amount of obligation and burden that they wanted to put on the parents. and I stood up and said, you know, a working parent or a poor parent can't do this, and I was just, you know, sneered at. And they needed the teachers, apparently, to sign a petition, so the superintendent sent around a representative to, you know, confront teachers, really, you know, put it in front of them and ask them to sign. So they signed, but then a lot of them left. I think that school is no longer a charter school, but it really didn't seem at all appropriate the way it was handled. And in the ongoing conduct of the thing, it was clear that the superintendent made his girlfriend the principal, and then she acquired a lot of expensive equipment that she put in her office, but the students didn't have access. It was not pretty, and I am appalled that our local and state politicians seem so enamored of charter schools and seem so ignorant of what a good job the public schools are doing under very adverse circumstances, with so many children not getting early childhood education, so many children living in poverty without access to basic needs, much less, after-school programs and nice computer camps and science camps and everything affluent kids get.
Mm.
So I just think it's grossly unfair, and I am absolutely floored that even though I'm retired, I am a member of the CTA, and I have heard not a peep from the California Teachers Association. The American Federation of Teachers at least has a statement up on the Internet, and I searched for one.
Gail, the California Teachers Association has rejected the nomination of Betsy DeVos. In fact, there was a large rally in downtown L.A. to protest what they call her extremist and anti-public school agenda. And the CTA represents 325,000 teachers in California, and they completely opposed it.
If I could just jump in terms of the comments here, because I think there are a couple of things that are worth noting. In sort of a well-articulated detail about what happens with charter schools. And to start off with the sort of demands on the parent to be present mm-hmm. at the school and participate. Immediately at that point, as the caller notes, we've separated out, we've segregated by class and economic opportunity one group of students from another. So the student whose parents are working three jobs in order to make ends meet is not going to be able to go to that charter school. That is entirely and completely contrary to what it is that it means to say we have public schools in which we welcome all students all the time for the same opportunities. The other piece that we see in charter schools is the tremendous churn of educators because when they're not unionized, they don't have the kinds of protections that keep them from being so incredibly stressed, overworked, having contracts changed at the last minute, having hours changed at the last minute. That's not good for young people. Students need teachers who are professionals, who have autonomy, and who are respected in the workplace, and that's what unions provide. But I think that the bigger thing that I just want to say about that I think is really important is that what we discovered in our campaign in Massachusetts to kill question two, which would have raised the cap on charter schools, is that people actually really love public education. Mm-hmm. They value it so deeply. We knocked on so many doors. We talked to so many people. And I can't tell you, I talked to charter parents who said to me, look, I really believe in public education. The issue is we're not funding our public schools mm-hmm. adequately. In Massachusetts, I was on a foundation commission that found that we are underfunding our public schools by more than $1 billion a year so that they're not able to have the after-school programs that are enrichment programs, so that we have libraries being closed across the state
wow.
in all kinds of districts because the funding isn't there. People want public schools, but they actually want fully funded public schools. And that was the excitement of what emerged, that all the narrative of Betsy DeVos and the corporate reformers that say people are angry at public schools, they don't want them, you know, they're failing schools. It didn't fly in Massachusetts. In Boston, when our governor went on TV to push the question to raise the cap and support it, the Boston parents started a hashtag, Visit Us Charlie. Charlie Baker's our governor.
saying, you come to the schools that you just said are failing, and we want to show you what's happening in our public schools that we're proud of. So that was, for me, that was an incredible gift from the No on Two campaign.
And your governor, Charlie Baker, he's a Republican?
He is a Republican. And he was a, you know, he ran with the idea that he was going to work to raise the cap on charter schools. He had two television ads working with the campaign to raise the cap, both of which backfired because he went on TV and he said, we need to save the students of Massachusetts from failing public schools. And the response that I got on the door sort of the next day when I was out canvassing was, he's the governor. Why is he telling us our schools are failing? Mm. Why isn't he doing something about fixing our public schools instead of saying that they're failing? So he was a big proponent. The money came from Wall Street, from hedge fund managers. He was down to the Manhattan Institute, I think it was in October, looking, we assume, to get more money from the private equity firms, and hedge fund managers are part of the Manhattan Institute. The exciting part about organizing around that is that we had connections in New York City, who, when he showed up at the Manhattan Institute, they were out there holding signs protesting his efforts to support the charter cap lift and protesting the Wall Street money that was behind that. There is a sort of national movement to understand who these people are who were behind this and why it matters, and why it matters to so many of us to preserve public education.
And Barbara, again, so much money was spent on this measure, money that could be spent on so many things in the classroom. How did this measure get on the ballot in the first place in Massachusetts?
This measure was put on the ballot. Kind of three things were happening at the same time in Massachusetts a year ago and a year and 6 months ago when charter proponents determined that they really wanted to come after Massachusetts because they understood that if they could get the cap raised on charter schools in Massachusetts, that it would be a feather in their cap, that it would be, after that, they could go state after state after state. Massachusetts has excellent public schools that we're really proud of, so they wanted to take us down a notch. So they came after us with a civil rights lawsuit claiming that if there was a wait list for charter schools, that students' civil rights were being attacked because they didn't have the same access to public education. They came after us with legislation in which they tried to get us to negotiate a cap raise within the State House. And in the background, they had this axe over our heads saying, they said in January a year ago, we're going to spend $18 million to put this ballot question, this question on the ballot. And in March of last year, the ballot question was winning. The yes people were winning 57 to 34 in our polling. But we understood that if this question were to pass, and if we were to give an inch on raising the cap on charter schools, that it was the beginning of the end for public education in Massachusetts. So we, with a coalition of partners, including AFT Massachusetts, Citizens for Public School, NAACP Northeast, Jobs with Justice, AFL-CIO Mass, said we can't let this happen. This is about the privatization of the public good, and we're going to stand strong. And we built a grassroots campaign where we knocked on so many doors. We have 110,000 members just within the Massachusetts Teachers Association. They went out and talked to people about this. People got excited about talking about public education in a way that was really a beautiful democratic process. As a matter of fact, I said to our Senate president after we won, all told, $41 million was spent in order to have a deeply democratic process in Massachusetts about charter schools. Next time, let's just have a deeply democratic process without having to spend $41 million.
And the measure lost with 62% of...
62%. We 62 to 38, there were only 18 districts that voted for the cap by small margins for raising the cap. Those were the wealthiest districts in Massachusetts. So the appeal of the narrative of the charter proponents that this was a civil rights issue, that this was going to serve the urban communities, black and brown and poor children, it was entirely ineffective. They lost just as handily in Boston as they did in Springfield, in Holyoke, in Northampton. Hmm. They only won in the rich districts. And even in Boston, they only won in the wealthiest wards.
And what was their main message? Again, $26 million on the pro-charter side from Wall Street, the Walton Foundation. MapLight took a look at this and found that Wall Street titans managing public school teacher pensions were funding the pro-charter school expansion side. $627,000 was spent on canvassing. What was their main message?
Their message was sort of fascinating. They first tried a message that said that this would bring more money into public schools, which was just sort of simply not true. They decided, you know, to call charter schools public schools and say that as money was leaving our true public schools to go to charter schools, and there was some minimal reimbursement to our public schools, that meant more money was coming to public education. It was fascinating to see how ineffective that message was. Again, sort of knocking on a door and saying, I'd like to talk to you about question two on the ballot, and what do you think about it? And people would be like, well, it's kind of confusing to me that this would give more money. Where's that more money coming from? So that was ineffective. And, of course, they pushed the idea that our public schools are failing and using, you know, test scores as a way to talk about that. But again, people understood that the issue for our schools that are struggling is an issue of economic justice, of racial justice, of both fully funding our public schools and addressing the economic needs of the communities in where our schools are struggling. People get that.
And what are you hearing now from the pro-charter side? Because what we see in California is when a lot of these measures go down, the groups that have endless amounts of money just bring them back next time.
Well, first, they spent a lot of time licking their wounds. I was on the radio with one of their the leaders of the Mass Charter School group, and he was complaining that we had so many people on the ground and that it sort of wasn't fair that we had 110,000 members. But actually what we're seeing right now within Massachusetts is that the governor and other corporate reformers are taking another tack in. They're using our accountability system, our school and district accountability system, which is primarily based on high-stakes test scores, to intensify the pressure on our urban districts in particular, but it's going to be on a lot of our districts, to meet demands of accountability, which if they are not met, where they will not be met because of what test scores actually represent, and then they're looking to change the law so they can more quickly go in and take over a district, move out the school committee, bring in a board of directors, and privatize the district that way. So our immediate next struggle is going to be around legislation that's looking to give them more power to do that. It's sort of their longer road to charterization, but that's the plan.
And talk about the significance of the funding. The Washington Post reports that the bulk of the money that was spent to support this measure, question two, came from a New York-based pro-charter group called Families for Excellent Schools. They donated just over $15 million, but because they're a nonprofit, they're not required to disclose their donors.
Yeah, more than 80% of the funding for the Yes campaign, we don't know who exactly those donors were. And, you know, that bothered people. You know, if these people are ostensibly doing something that they're proud of that's going to be good for the students and communities of the Commonwealth, how come they're not putting their names out there to say that this is who they are? It was interesting in terms of the funding from the privateers, how much we actually didn't push that issue in our campaign. We just let that issue bubble up, and it bubbled up so that, again, when we were knocking on doors, even though it wasn't a big part of our messaging initially, the people made it part of the messaging because they were so outraged about the amount of money being spent and then who was spending it. And when our governor in his commercial sat in his beautiful mansion in Swampscott, Massachusetts, with leather chairs surrounding him saying, geez, your schools are failing, He just identified himself with those Wall Street power brokers.
We have an email from Wayne who says, let's accept the facts and work on minimizing damage. At this point, our focus needs to be tactical, getting more reasonable people elected to school boards to resist locally, getting more reasonable people elected to state and federal positions, and fund groups trying to improve and fund public schools and colleges, and be strategic, lobby for public education and against whatever DeVos proposed idiocy that may transpire, support and rally for reasonable candidates, unions, write compelling opinions to social media, newspapers, and fight the good fight. What would you say, Barbara, for people who cared about public education, what is the best approach to take given the reality that we're facing?
Well, I think the writer is right in the sense that we have to, for all of what's happening under the Trump regime, really actually localize our battles. It's a bit counterintuitive because the battle is so national and it's so broad, and you know the carnage, to use his word, that he's going to create nationally in public education and in other spheres is so overwhelming in many ways. But really, the struggle needs to be at the local level. We need to form the kinds of coalitions that we were able to form in Massachusetts, where parents, students, school committees, community organizations, labor really got together and said, this is important to us, and we're gonna fight for it. And we made it a local fight. We made it a fight about your school and your community, and what do we want for the children right here, for the communities right here. I think we need to do that. I do agree that we need to start looking at having electeds at the school committee level, so that we get people on our side. It can really make a difference. It's going to, at some point, take meaningful resistance to what's being passed down and what we're being told to implement. And when I see people coming to the airports on Saturday night, I think people are ready for that kind of meaningful resistance. I myself, personally, am not interested in working to change the Democratic Party at this point. I think we need to put our own candidates forward. I think we really need to be clear about what we want and not allow this actually both devastating and sort of promising moment in history to be lost. When so many people are aware of what's about to happen relative to public education, they have awakened a giant.
And Barbara, I just have to ask you to 30 seconds. What do you mean when you say you don't want to change the Democratic Party?
I don't want to spend a lot of time trying to convince Democrats to come on our side. I want to go and do the work that we need to do and let them come to us. I don't want to talk to them. I just want to build a movement so that they realize they better be talking to the movement people and have the change go that way.
Well, Barbara,
our power is going to be.
We would love to have you on a future show about that very topic. Barbara Mataloni is president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be on, Rose.
Thank you. And coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with environmental photographers who are documenting the impacts of climate change. I hope you can join us for that tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Your Call is produced at KALW. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. You can email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.